local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
.209 is responding to our Brandon Ayuk conversation. Trade him. Anything more than a fourth round pick is overpaying.
I don't know. I mean, we saw Keenan Allen yesterday go for a fourth round pick. And Keenan Allen, so you know, he's a lot older than Brandon Ayuk is. Well, I feel like you can get more, especially just with how receivers are valued.
So I guess 209 is saying if they're willing to give you a first round pick,
that's
do it.
Exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
What they're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think that's, you know, because you're not going to get better value for that. I mean, than that for Brandon Ayuk. I mean, again, like in the Vikings example, the Vikings pick that they got for Stephon Diggs even was the 22nd or 23rd pick. So if you're being offered allegedly, what did you say, 17 and another pick on top of that?
Mm-hmm.
That's maximizing the value.
That was just projected.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like a first and a third is a no-brainer.
Yeah, right.
You have to do it.
You get more for Ayuk pretty much than what you traded for McCaffrey almost, right? There. So
you're definitely getting more.
Yeah.
That first-round pick, I mean, the first-round pick is like gold in the NFL, 17, right?
17, too? Like, that's in the middle of the
it's
first
pretty
round.
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just this draft, I don't know.
I mean, even if we wanted to go crazy, I mean, you know, you could package those picks and move up. Like, if you really like you can move up into the top six, top eight, if you package those. I think the Niners would be better off using those as two individuals, but you know, it depends what you're trying to do.
So can we play the hypothetical real quick?
Let's do it.
So Ayuk's gone. Let's say that first round pick happens. Let's just say right now.
Yeah.
So draft hasn't happened yet. It's Debo weather time. Debo is the starter. Kittle's restructured. Jawan Jennings essentially jumps into the number two role for the Niners.
Unless they draft a receiver.
Yeah, but
you're saying at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment. Yeah. So then Jawan's two. You got Danny Gray, who's probably, I think his days are numbered with the 49ers. Ronnie Bell kind of jumps into three. He got some play last year, had a few touchdowns, I think one even from Darnold. The Niners, you think they draft a receiver at 17. My only issue with that is that if they draft a receiver at 17, I don't think he immediately becomes the number two guy. Like, I don't think that's a draft him. He's Ayuk's role now or whatever that was, because Shanahan asked so much from the guys. Like, we've talked about Ayuk being in the doghouse for not blocking or, you know, whatever it is. I think there's so much to learn and so much you have to take from this scheme and this offense that he wouldn't just fit right in.
No, totally. And I mean, I'm looking at the receiver class here, and even, you know, 17, three receivers are already supposed to be off the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is another guy who made some random catches in the playoffs. As of right now, he's still on the Niners. He is 31, but Chris Conley,
dude, he's been almost non-existent.
And then
for
he
this
showed
team.
Up. Then he got
I know.
Targets in the playoffs.
Yeah. It was really weird. I think
he's in his ninth season. He's
I think
31.
It had to do with injury, because Debo did go out in that Packers game.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I want to say, I'm almost positive he had less than five catches all year, and it took him forever to get his first catch. He's been around he's one of those Shanahan guys that he loves, so he's been in and out of the practice squad. They'd bring him up. He would get reps on offense, but due to injury or something like that, like when Ray was out or something. But besides that, he's not going to be a factor to the 49ers, in my opinion.
From the 209, a different 209. Keep in mind that this upcoming draft is loaded with wide receivers. It's the strongest position in the draft, so the value of established receivers is down. That's what we spoke about when we were in Vegas, though, and how confusing it is, because wide receivers are getting the bag, but at the same time, wide receivers keep coming out.
Right.
So we don't know if it's like the Big Short, if there's going to be a big dip at some point, but they're still getting paid. It's not that I disagree with you, 209, but clearly there's still value. Clearly there's a lot of value with established wide receivers.
Yeah.
Is that value worth a first-round pick?
Well, I think the problem is that, yes, they come out in bunches, and it feels like the classes are big, but receiver classes are starting to be like quarterback classes. Again, to take it to let me get it here, the Justin Jefferson draft, there was what? There was Henry Ruggs. There was Jerry Jeudy. There was Jalen Reagor. There was, I think, another receiver taken in front of him. And Justin Jefferson, who was like the fourth or fifth receiver taken, ended up being the best one. So even though there is a big crop of them, there's no guarantee that it's going to work out. I mean, you know, we were just talking in the pre-show about the Chiefs signing Hollywood Brown. Hollywood Brown's another name that was almost a slam dunk, can't miss. And then he's fine. He's okay, but he's not what Brandon Ayuk is giving you right now.
No, but now he gets to be with Mahomes.
Sure, and that's the argument. But Patrick Mahomes or Brock Purdy is not Patrick Mahomes.
Right. That's a good point, but yeah, there is the relationship aspect of this as well. From the 831, if they shed Ayuk's contract via trade, that puts the Niners back in play to make a move for Patrick Surtain from Denver. That's a good point, 831, because George Kittle also restructured either today or yesterday. A couple guys have restructured, and let's just say the Niners universe really believes that something big is happening either today or this weekend. Now, maybe that's just optimism, but Surtain has been a name that has come up to be that shutdown guy for the Niners. So we'll see how it all plays out. Chris, you did have the actual Anthony Davis versus Sabonis numbers, which I'm really surprised we have not seen, or maybe I'm lucky enough to not be a part of Lakers Twitter, but I haven't seen any of these numbers. And as if they're anything like you say they are, numbers don't lie, but maybe the record does.
Yeah. So if you want to, you can look at it in a couple different ways. You can do the per game, you could do the per 36, all that stuff. We'll just do the per game thing for now. In the 10 games in which they've played, Sabonis has only started 9. It is important to remember Anthony Davis was the number one pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. Domantas Sabonis was a guy who took a couple years and a couple trades to eventually get his footing in the league. But nonetheless, Anthony Davis in those 10 games, 33 minutes played. He averages 23 points, 10 rebounds, three of those offensive. And they don't have his shooting percentage, but in those games, in those 10 games as well, Domantas Sabonis, 13 points to Anthony Davis's 23. He's at 10.6 rebounds per game, so technically less than AD. He takes about half of the attempts as well. If you want to do per 36 to try and even everything out, still ends up in Anthony Davis's favor. AD, 25 points to Sabonis's 18, 11 rebounds to Sabonis's 12. And even the assist category, Sabonis is at 5.6, Davis is at 2.6. And here we have free throw or field goal percentage. AD's 52% in their matchups, Sabonis is 55. So it's nothing crazy. I mean, AD has the better stats, and it's not like AD completely falls off a cliff. Like, it's not like he's shooting in the 40s or anything. Mm-hmm. But statistically, I mean, and AD in those games, let me see if they have his blocks, 2.3 blocks per game to Sabonis' 0.5. So again, AD is providing both sides of the floor. He's filling up the stat sheet. It is.
So is it a bad matchup or not?
No, I think it is a bad matchup. I mean, and if you look at, because the thing is here, they have the game logs. If you look at since he's joined Sacramento, it's a lot more even. They've had 4 matchups. I won't go through all of them, but essentially they're stalemating in a lot of the points. Sabonis is usually killing him in the rebound department. And then in the assist, of course, Sabonis has the edge there, but AD is, he's still got a couple 4-block games, a couple 3-block games in there. I would still say it's a bad matchup, but AD just isn't dominant in those games. You don't see any. AD doesn't have he has one performance over 30 points since Sabonis has really entered into like actually playing. Like, there's 4 matchups here where Sabonis has logged 8 minutes, 12 minutes, 25 minutes during his rookie season, and 28 minutes once. So, I mean, AD in a lot of those is playing 43, 36, 32. He's playing tons of minutes, and he's got a 37 piece, a 34 piece, a 38 piece in there really early in his career. So you could argue that more so in the beginning of his career, AD really took advantage. But since Sabonis has kind of grown into his own, it's been a little bit more of a stalemate between the two.
Okay.
But I think the problem is AD is supposed to be, from everybody else's perspective,
right.
AD is supposed to be head and shoulders better than, no pun intended.
Yes.
He's supposed to be head and shoulder better than Sabonis. And for the most part, when they match up, it's pretty neutralized.
Could you say, that maybe pound for pound, based on expectations, Sabonis has been better? Is that what it is?
For sure.
Even though maybe straight, it's almost, it's like a... It's like a handicap in golf.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I may have played better than my buddy who is a scratch golfer or somebody that shoots in the 70s. He's better than me.
Right.
But I am performing better than him based on
expectations. Right. Exactly. Definitely. But I will also say there is some, especially again, recently, there's some tangible numbers that show Sabonis is giving it to AD. The last three times they've played, AD 3 of 9, 33%. The game last week, AD 5 of 13, 38%. Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, AD 17 of 18, 38%. So that's three straight games Sabonis has held him under 40% from the field.
Yeah.
That's not nothing.
Right. Right. And maybe it is what Draymond is saying, the team and how things are kind of moving and grooving for the team, but we're still going to ride for Domantas Sabonis, of course, and that's why he is still number six in the MVP ladder, and AD is nowhere to be found.
Nope, nowhere to be found at all.
And just from a consistent standpoint, I think for me, because it's gotten to double digits, that is why it doesn't matter. It does matter if AD was putting up monster games, but he's not.
He's not, no.
If he was putting up monster games and losing, the problem is even if you're canceling out and you can't even dial in for one game to beat a dude that you have not been able to beat throughout your career. And the other thing is it's not, as we discussed, it isn't just Sabonis.
No.
It's the other big boys, no pun intended, in the league that he has not shown up against. When we return, we preview the New York Knicks and discuss the keys to the game. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
From the 415, happy Friday, guys. Y'all are the best radio show from 10 to 2. No doubt, in my opinion, from the 415.
Thank you.
Thank you, 415. I would agree. I would definitely agree. You know, sometimes, I'll just put it to you like this.
Don't get fired.
Sometimes.
I don't like what you're cooking here.
All I'll say is this. Sometimes people like to believe a product is better than another product because of where it comes from. I've joked around and said that Kendrick Lamar could put out something that doesn't sound too good, but because it's Kendrick, people will convince themselves that it sounds good. Mm. Same with Drake. Or if you go to a Michelin star restaurant and you get something that doesn't taste as good as maybe you thought it would, you might say or try to convince yourself that this is good. So take with that what you will. Take with that what you will. As we continue the conversation, don't forget, in 45 minutes, you will have an opportunity to win tickets to see Hasan Minhaj at the Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center from beautiful downtown Sacramento on March 29th. You will have an opportunity at 1 p.m. breaking down all things Kings and the Knicks, who are going to do battle tomorrow night. The Knicks are 5-5 in their last 10 games. They are 14-2 since acquiring OG Anunoby, who will be playing, most likely will be playing tomorrow night. You worried about the Knicks? What's your worry meter at?
I am worried that we're going to see the same game that we saw last year where the Knicks just dominated the offensive glass, and it was truly demoralizing. I mean, we ended up seeing it in the playoffs, and I've talked about it all the time about how it was seeing how you die mm-hmm. before you actually die. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how it played out. It was incredibly frustrating. That was the day I realized how effective offensive rebounds can be and right. just how demoralizing it can be for your team, because it just feels helpless, and it felt helpless in that game. So honestly, as long as it doesn't feel like that again, that's really my only worry for this game mm-hmm. is that it starts to feel like the Kings just cannot grab a rebound and save their life.
Josh Hart,
Isaiah Hartenstein. I mean, the problem is the Knicks have only gotten better. They've only gotten more people who attack the offensive glass. Precious Achiuwa is a freaking lunatic attacking the glass. He'll have games where he has like 11 rebounds, but 8 will be offensive. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know how you try. I mean, you got to put an emphasis on boxing out. Again, taking it back to the fundamentals, it's boxing out. Mm-hmm. It's saying, forget about the ball. If you find a man, the ball will find a person.
Yes.
But you just got to make sure your guy isn't the one getting it. So they got to be good at crashing. Also, I mean, if the Knicks are going to crash the offensive glass, Kings got to play fast. You got to take advantage. If Josh Hart is going to close in and try and get every offensive rebound, that means somebody needs to be taking off on the other end and trying to get in transition. So those are really the two things, is transition points and offensive rebounds. You have to limit the offensive rebounds. You've got to get as many transition opportunities as possible.
Yeah, you do not want that Knicks defense to be able to set up and...
That's true too, right?
Just grind you down. That's what they want to do. And keeping teams... Under 80 points is crazy, Chris.
It's impossible.
Not 100, not 90, but 80 points. They have done that a couple times here in this stretch, and the only issue for them has been their ability to score the basketball, and it feels like the Kings are finally rounding out defensively. So it's really going to be a juggernaut situation, and who is going to push and pull. The Knicks are 8th in defensive rating, by the way.
Eighth. I mean, that's kind of what they do. I mean, that's their brand, man, especially, you know, if OG's going to be playing and they're going to try and lock down and be as physical as possible. I mean, this might be an opportunity for the Kings to maybe get the free throw advantage mm-hmm. because the Knicks are just going to look to beat the hell out of you. I mean, it's what they do. They're a physical team. They're trying to take it back to the 90s and of their glory days. In the same way, the Kings want to replicate the ball movement, the exciting play, fast motion. The Knicks style of basketball is almost the complete counter opposite of it. And it'll be interesting to see how those two styles clash, too. Like, one team is going to be able to dictate the pace. And, again, it's kind of on the Kings to get the pace up because, mm-hmm. you know, the Knicks they're going to slow it down every time. It's easy to play slow. You just bring that thing down, bring the ball down, let your offense set up, let the people move. It's going to be on the Kings to make sure when they get the ball, they're pushing. And then on the defensive end, you got to have as much ball pressure as possible. You want the Knicks passing the ball around, getting out of their flow. And I mean, at that point, again, you just got to make sure that you're not allowing them to get second, third opportunities. I mean, I'm looking at it here. It looks like a broken number, but the Knicks had 23 offensive rebounds in that game last year, which was the highest that the Kings allowed all year. Mitchell Robinson, who won't be playing, he's out for the season. He had 6. Josh Hart had 8. He had 8 offensive rebounds last year in that game. Isaiah Hartenstein in 24 minutes grabbed 4. So, I mean, again, Sabonis is the best rebounder in the league. Yeah. Not really concerned about him, but we saw even in the playoffs, like if Sabonis is going to try and box out Looney, it's on everybody else to crash the glass. Everybody, it's got to be Harrison Barnes. We cannot have a Harrison Barnes 2-rebound game. Keegan the other day had 11 boards. We need more of that. If Kevin Huerter is going to be playing, he's had a couple games where he's rebounded. Need all of those guys focusing on rebounds as much as possible, because that's almost like the Knicks version of getting to the free throw line. It's the Knicks version of shooting 43s is, hey, we might not be a great offense, but if you give us multiple cracks at it, we'll make the shot eventually. And you just, you got to limit their style of play as much as possible.
Do you think that this is an opportunity? I'm just thinking as far as defensively. Number one, we don't know. Whenever a knee is involved, you worry as far as Trey Lyles. But Right. Even if he is available, do you think, not that we have not seen the Sabonis and Alex Len or Sabonis and JaVale McGee, I don't think at all this season. No. And I'm wondering if that was a conversation we had before the season started. I'm wondering if maybe you don't see that, but you see the return of a JaVale and see more of Alex Len just to get some bigger bodies in there to make sure you can get these rebounds taken care
of. And first off, I mean, I'm curious if Sabonis is going to be on the injury report. We saw him bang knees with LeBron, and he finished the game, but it wouldn't surprise me if he at least shows up on the injury report. But, yeah, I mean, assuming Sabonis is going to play, which he's done every single game, I would definitely love it. I would welcome it a lot because I think that's the best way. We talked to Alex Len about it actually on Media Day, me and Whitey did. We asked him, hey, how are you guys going to adjust after what Kevon Looney just did to you guys to kick you out of the playoffs? What do you think is going to be this year's counter to that? Alex Len said, well, we've been messing around with playing some two center lineups. I don't think we've seen it once this entire season, but it wouldn't surprise me if we see it against the Knicks because it just makes so much sense. And again, their rebounding is the thing that will keep them in that game. So if you can limit that, however it's done, it might not look pretty, but I just think if you eliminate the Knicks' rebounding advantage, you're probably going to win the game.
Yeah, and of course there is Jalen Brunson and containing Jalen Brunson, and that's going to be difficult. I mean,
another 40 piece last night.
We were talking about Hunter Renfrow, who was released from the Raiders, and hey, why does he punt return? Oh, because he's shifty. And I would say that's a great word to describe Jalen Brunson as well. He can stop, he can start, he can really just put you in a position where you don't feel comfortable. So we will break down why Jalen Brunson is so hard to defend. Also, some pocket watching when we return. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
We are 30 minutes away from your chance to win tickets to Hasan Minhaj. All guests and callers join us on the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Emmy is wanting to know, one of our P1s, Emmy is wanting to know any update on Sasha. Not that we've heard. We are hoping to hear from Brandon Nunes and Frankie Cardicelli today. A shoot-around is probably over now?
It's getting started.
So hopefully we hear from Brandon and Frankie. But
pretty much exactly March 9th was the four-week mark for the 4 to 6 week reevaluation period for Sasha. So We're
at the 6 week mark?
4 week. Okay. We are at the 4 week. Saturday, March 9th was the 4 week mark for Sasha's last update, and they said it would be 4 to 6 weeks for the next update. So, you know, I guess it could, in theory, be happening anytime now, but I would probably suspect it'll be more towards the back end of that sixth week.
And then after that, just doing a quick fast forward here. Assuming that the Kings make some moves during the offseason, what does that do to Sasha's status, right? I mean, when this season ends, unless Sasha comes back and is just shooting the lights out, right? Unless that happens, you go into next season, and what does this organization know about Sasha Vezenkov?
He's a shooter for sure. I mean, he's a guy who you can throw in and, you know, can definitely knock down some shots and is fearless about taking them. Absolutely. I mean, that is the one thing that, you know, was promised about Sasha that did not disappoint at all is he is a legitimate shooter. He walked in day one as the best shooter on this team. We haven't necessarily seen it completely play out on the floor, but I mean, from everything I heard, they had a board up there that got replaced with their free throw board, which we have not heard much from since. But yeah, that board used to have the leader. It was a leaderboard of their shooting drill that they did all summer long, and Sasha was number one by far. I think they said he set a team record. As a matter of fact, I guess it's just the past two seasons, but had set a team record for the highest score on that drill. So he is a legitimate shooter, 1,000%. It's just the defense that we got to figure out, and even then, the defense was a lot better than what I think most people expected. I think a lot of people were expecting Sasha to just be a turnstile and look lost on defense. And I can't really think of many times, if any, where Sasha was out there and I was like, this guy is just getting abused. Now, it wasn't like they were hunting him like we've seen them hunt Kevin Herter.
We never saw enough of him for that to happen.
Right.
Though.
But just the baseline of, is he unplayable defensively? I thought it was fine, yes. If not even more than fine. So we'll have to see with the larger sample size. But for the most part, I wouldn't mind seeing Sasha be given the same equal opportunity that he was given this year.
Well, I think it's going to be equal, but I guess my point is it's not going to be more. If the idea, depending on how this thing ends, the idea is that the Kings are going to upgrade in certain positions that are already getting more time than Sasha. I guess it just goes back to what the hope of Sasha was.
I mean, I still think he can be a flamethrower. I don't think Mike Brown played him. I would say Mike Brown didn't play him enough. I'm not super upset about it. I'm not somebody who says if we played Sasha more, maybe we'd have X amount more wins. But I think that there's a role for him for sure. I mean, especially with the inconsistency from three that we saw from Keegan and Kevin Herter this year. And, HB just didn't take a high volume of them. I think that there's a place for Sasha. And if Trey Lyles isn't, we've seen him here recently kind of turn down a lot of threes. I still think the Kings could use a lineup where they just go all out shooting. So I still feel like there's a role for him. And, man, I mean, if he's hitting threes at a 40%+ clip, you can't keep him off the floor, even if you do feel bad about his defense. So I think, it really is more like a situation with Kevin Herter. I think that's how you treat Sasha. Obviously, not in a starting role, but just if his shots are hidden, he's going to play. But if his shots aren't falling, that's where you start to see some of the other warts in his game. And again, I just don't think we saw enough of him this season to really get a full picture of exactly how good his offense is versus how bad maybe his defense actually is.
I hope for his sake he does at least get to come back before the season ends.
Yeah.
Because he's going to need it going into this summer.
Yeah.
Right? That can't be – I can't even remember the last time we saw Sasha. So you need to see him. You need to get a better look. And it would be great to get a look at him closer to the playoffs.
But it's also he made a big move this year. Let's not forget, this dude moved across the world and didn't have any friends, didn't have family that moved out with him. There was an adjustment period that did take place just in terms of life. And I do think that has something to do with just getting, feeling comfortable, getting acclimated to everything. And we'll see. I mean, we'll just see what a whole year of comfortability does for him. I mean, it does wonders for rookies in general. We can't forget Sasha is still technically, even though he's 28, he is still technically a rookie for the NBA. And the NBA, in terms of lifestyle, is not like overseas. I'm sure that took a really big adjustment period, too. So there's just not a lot of things working in Sasha's favor coming into it. And I just think it's a little early to give up.
No, yeah, I don't want to give up. I just want to. I hope to see him again before the season ends, and see him in a positive capacity. As we move over to Team Lefty, speaking of Jalen Brunson and what makes him so difficult to contain, you're gonna put him on Ellis Island, I would think. Here's a question, and not to
you can put Davion on him even.
You can put Davion on him because he's a smaller guy, but I like the length. Yeah. Unless you think that Keon's not quick enough, I would prefer length.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just mean in general, this is you don't just have to look at Keon for that option. You can also put Davion. This is one of the few instances where it's almost the perfect Davion matchup to put him on. So I might not let that opportunity go by the wayside for an opportunity for Davion to start feeling good about himself too.
True.
Because Keon's already feeling good about himself, and Davion has played great as of late, but this would be a nice little, hey, don't forget about me kind of thing for Davion here. But yes, absolutely, Keon makes tons of sense to throw on Brunson and just trying to make it difficult for him. He's definitely fallen into that guy of the coach cliche of you're not going to be able to stop him, but it's about slowing him down, not letting him get to his spots and all that. And it's tough. When you're going against the smaller guy, they do usually have a bit of shiftiness. They usually do have a first step advantage as well. So it's just about really keeping him in front of you. And, I mean, ideally, and again, like we talked about earlier, if the Kings are going to dictate the style of play, don't let him go off. You can't let him get free. I think the three-pointers are going to be huge for him. Like, if you can defend the perimeter as well as they've been defending these last two games, it seems like they should be able to slow a guy down like Jalen Brunson. He really doesn't, you know, with the Kings' newfound perimeter defense, it does feel like this is a matchup where the Kings really should dictate everything that goes on.
Yeah. I hope that you don't see a blitz tomorrow, because to me, a blitz means that something has gone wrong.
Sure.
And to be completely honest, now that I think about it, ever since Keon has been in the lineup, when is the last time we saw a blitz?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been a while. I mean, yeah, it's those two games we didn't really see any, but we'll see. I mean, because we haven't talked about him yet either, but Dante DiVincenzo, I've got him circled for tomorrow's matchup, because I think I talked about it earlier.
Oh, is this a mini revenge game?
This is not a mini. This is a big revenge game for Dante. It's going to be on the Kings floor. He's playing the best basketball he's maybe played in his entire career. This is an opportunity for Dante DiVincenzo not to tell the Kings this is what you missed out on, but to say you guys did me dirty, and it's actually like kind of lit a fuel to my fire, or set a fuel to my fire for these past couple years. I am the guy that I am today because of what you guys did to me a couple years ago. It wouldn't surprise me if Dante's got something locked up for the Kings. For people who don't know, who haven't been paying attention, Dante DiVincenzo this season is shooting 39% from three on 8.1 attempts. He has been, honestly, like, I think he's got the second most threes in the NBA behind Steph Curry in terms of totals. He has been an absolute sniper this season. And something tells me he's going to have a little something for the Kings.
Which has been really, really fascinating, because after he left the Kings and goes to the Warriors,
right,
he wasn't really that. You have different weapons on the Warriors, right? You still had Jordan Poole at that point and Andrew Wiggins. So he was in a different role.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget, I hop on one of our, because I'm not watching every single Knicks game, and the last thing I remember from Dante DiVincenzo is he couldn't hit anything in the playoffs for the Warriors, and then he goes off and joins Team Villanova in New York. And then I'm getting ready for prop talk, I'll put it to you like that, and I see him set at 18.5 points. I'm thinking, what the heck is going on? Hop on League Pass, and I've been watching the Knicks these last couple weeks, and I'm thinking, this is a completely different dude.
Yes.
He shot more, but he was kind of like Josh Hart on the Warriors. He was that kind of that gritty dude on the Warriors. And then he comes to the Knicks, and he, part of that being because the Knicks offensively needed help, but now he's just pulling.
Yeah, he's pulling. I'm looking at his game log here. There is so many games, like more games than any human should have, of 15 three-point attempts. Let me see here. In Dante DiVincenzo's last 19 games, he's averaging 21 points per game. Shout out, Dante. He's shooting 41% from the field. Not great, but it's because he's taking 18 shots a game. 12.5 of those are threes, which he's knocking down at 37%. There is 6 games of his last 19 in which he's taken over 15 threes, and there's like 2 or 3 in which he's taken 14.
That's insane.
So he's just putting them up like like a madman. And, you know, it's working out for him. I guess, you know, it is threes more than two, and the points per possession, I'm sure, equal out. But that dude is pulling, and he's been a problem. I mean, he is the Knicks. Him and Brunson are really the Knicks offense here. Like, with Julius Randle out, they don't really have many guys to go to, and their guards are the big reason why they are even able to score more than 80 points, more than their opponents these days. So it's on the Kings. I mean, we found this new three-guard lineup, and a lot of the advantages of this three-guard lineup are the ability to pressure the ball. Mm-hmm. That's going to be tested on Saturday, for sure.
Shooters Arena.
Yep.
Hopefully not tomorrow night. When we return, a little bit of pocket watching. What is on tap this weekend? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Guys, I have a question for the group and also for everybody listening here. Styles and Watkins taking you up to 2 p.m. Got the Drive Guys coming up after that. In 15 minutes, you will have a chance to win tickets to Hasan Minhaj at Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center. That is March 29th, thanks to Live Nation. Chris Watkins will pick the number. So here's my question, guys. So I'm going to the game. I'm going to the game tomorrow with another couple.
Okay.
Right? And very close.
This guy is your friend we were talking about?
Yeah. This guy was in my wedding. We're boys, right? We're close. My question is, four seats in a row.
Okay.
Right? How should we approach the seating arrangement? So he's my friend, right? The wife and his fiance know each other through us, but we've known each other for years.
Yeah.
So I'm closing my eyes and I'm imagining if you go two guys, two gals, then somebody is going to be really far from the rest, other person.
Right.
Do you sacrifice
How close are the ladies? Like in terms of
text each other or send each other Instagram. Yeah. Videos. But whenever you see each other, it's all love.
All copacetic.
Yes.
I would say, I feel like you and your buddy have to sit next to each other.
We have to.
Like, I feel like that's why everyone's here, right? Well, like, you're all there because you guys are friends, and this is probably a you guys-led activity.
I'm thinking it's got to be me.
I would just sandwich you guys in the middle.
And then have the ladies on the outside? You can't have them on the outside.
Well, I don't want to, add awkward tension that's not there, but, you want there to be a buffer of, hey, I can talk to my friend, and, if my lady needs me to talk or whatever, if she's not having a good time,
They're driving up from the
I just
East
wouldn't
want
to force your wife and your friend's wife to have...
It wouldn't be awkward. They both are into sports, so I'm thinking it's got to be me... Him, his fiance, and I just sacrifice my wife, and we're just on completely opposite sides. Hey, I'll see you in a couple hours.
I think you might need to talk to your wife about that.
Even if
I don't think it shouldn't be like that big of a deal, but it's just like a hey, are you cool? This is what I was thinking. Like, hey, I really want to see, because your friend doesn't live in town, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think it's a situation where no matter what, you and your friend have to sit next to each other. I would just ask your wife, honestly. I would ask, would you rather sit next to her or would you rather sit next to me?
It's all going to happen so fast once you get there.
That's true, too. Right. Yeah. You all have these plans. You start
and then you start wiggling
it. You start doing that.
It's like when we go to a restaurant. Oh, did you want, and you sit?
Yeah.
You want to sit there? Farmer Bleezy 22 says Alan and your buddy are sitting in the middle and ladies on the sides.
That's what I said.
But they're so far removed. They live together. We live together. They drove up. They can chit chat.
Ladies on the inside, boys on the outside.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
That is not happening, Nate.
Man.
I mean, I would just ask your wife in you can even preface it as I'm not saying you don't like her, but do you want to sit next to her for the 2.5 hours, or would you rather sit next to me?
We already went to a game together.
Because she can kind of do her own thing. Yes. If she's next to you, she doesn't have to worry about oh, like, let me make sure she's having a good time. Let me socialize with her.
But I can't stress enough that we saw each other a lot. So it were
you being the friend group,
the
has
friend
seen
group,
each other a
yes.
Lot.
So it would not be awkward. It would not be awkward.
This is an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
This 1,000%
916 says ask your wife, but yes, that's the right order. I think 916 is saying the two and two. I don't know. Or the two in two men in.
I would definitely just ask her if she's comfortable sitting next.
What if I don't want to ask her?
Well, then.
Okay, well, now you're just causing problems.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I know, dude.
I'll ask.
I have a party I'm going to
don't
tomorrow.
Don't get yourself in trouble.
Yeah. I guess I'm in a similar
situation. Tomorrow night? Nate's going to a party?
I'm in a similar situation tomorrow, I guess. Awkward. Curb.
Let's hear it.
It just, if anyone's listening, I don't want to hurt any feelings and have a blow up.
You're the one who said
made
it
into a thing.
I don't
want to
go. Plain and simple. Saturdays are rough for me. I'm always complaining to everyone here about Saturdays. I got a rough Saturday.
You do have a tough Saturday.
Yeah, so
you would like to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I don't like St. Patrick's Day. I hate corned beef.
Oh, see, I had no idea. St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, so it's technically Sunday, but everybody's going to be outside.
Yeah, dude.
That's a nightmare. No, dude, I'm on your side, Nate. Absolutely not.
The only thing that's cool is they have an open bar bartender they hired. I'm limited with the people I know.
In St. Patty's Day stuff?
Dude,
Of course. You might not know it yet, but
you know,
yes,
Nate, you give a lot. You give a lot. You're at Target. Yeah. There's a lot going
on. I love
on.
That you said, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I'm trying here, dude.
Cut that.
I know.
Cut
I'm that, trying Nate, here, dude. I appreciate it.
916 says, your friend, fiance, wife. Yeah, that's what it is. Thank you, 916, from family Schlegel. I highly recommend not asking your wife for her opinion.
What's that about?
That guy's name is Family Schlegel.
I think they're being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Also, Patrick Donaldson, you could always switch it up at halftime.
Oh, there you go. There's the best
Patrick.
But
what's going to happen, though, is like you said, dude, it's a heat of the moment thing. You can plan all you want.
Because then
but
you have
once,
to walk in.
Yeah,
at the
once
same
you
time.
Get punched in the mouth, the game plan changes. Game plan's
but
out
no,
the window.
Now I'm overthinking this. Yeah. Chris knows I'm an overthinker.
Yeah.
So then you have to walk. In the you have to walk in the
down
order
the stairs, right.
of how you want to sit.
Yeah, you.
Which
oh wait, let
arena,
me go first. Let
which
me.
Starts outside the arena at the security guard, and
you know it's going to be a big crowd in there. If someone gets in the way,
yeah,
dude,
it's done. It's done. And then you, hey, don't go yet. Hold on. Yeah, she was supposed to go.
And someone's like, I'm going to go get a drink. You're like, no, we're going to sit first, and then you go get your drink.
Do you guys want something? No, I do not. No,
and
I
you
do
don't
not.
Either.
That wasn't part of the plan.
Yeah. See, now I'm already getting anxiety over this. It's supposed to be a good time.
I know.
It'll be a good time watching the
Kings
and Knicks.
Why are social events like this,
dude,
man?
Yeah.
Why can't
social anxiety
we just
is a real thing.
Do you think? Yeah.
And then I got to text her. I got to text my wife, hey, are you good with this?
Right. Well, maybe...
Is that how? Yeah.
You know what? I think you're just in a lose-lose situation.
That's right. And
I think there's
and
no
so
way
is Nate.
You can win.
Nate's got to eat.
I know.
Some.
I don't
some
like
corned
beef and cabbage. I don't like pastrami.
Yeah.
I know pastrami's like similar to corned beef, so that's the reason I say that.
No. So I'm that's what you have to eat tomorrow.
I'm assuming, yeah. And
some
I just
potatoes.
Yeah, my dad likes to go hard for St. Patty's Day too on Sunday. So he always does corned beef every year. I'm like, dude, I don't like. And he's like, we're making it. It's going to be so awesome. And I'm like, dude, it's
overrated.
So, I just hate it.
Yeah.
So random enough, what was it? Maybe 3-4 years ago, me and my wife and I, we were in Roseville for St. Patty's Day. We drove to Roseville.
That is
really?
Random.
That is so random.
25-year-olds just tearing up Roseville. Tearing up the Ville. It was a great time.
Rose is a little better, but the Ville's cool.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what if I'm able to say what's the main thing, and everyone can read between the lines here. Sometimes they're a sponsor, and they have a really great venue. It's really the main thing in Roseville.
All I'm thinking of is the Galleria.
Sunsplash.
I don't know if we can discuss.
What are you talking about?
It's got a really good venue at the venue.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
And there's lightning.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. So
there we go.
That's
okay.
Lincoln, but
So we tried our luck out there.
And then
after that, we tore up the Ville, man.
Oh yeah, I forgot because you have roots to that place when we were first talking.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
That's our second home.
That's good. That's right awesome, there. Man.
From
Congrats.
Steven,
yeah,
916, you're putting way too much thought into this. Yeah. Well, that's what we do.
1,000%.
That is what we do.
That's who you are, though, Alan, and I'm glad you own, like, you're just, honestly, you're just you 24/7.
Yeah, honest Alan, well, that's what
honest
call
Alan.
Honest Alan.
You say some of the funniest things I've ever heard in
well,
my
you
life.
Well, you know,
that's definitely true.
Honest Alan, I'm not like Dave, though. Got to see Honest Abe in person. I don't know if you saw
Honest
that.
Dave?
That
no.
picture. Honest Abe.
Oh, God.
When he saw Abraham Lincoln
sitting in front of the Lincoln statue.
Yes, it was a very good picture.
Are we talking about Dave's Instagram?
Yes. We are talking
about Oh, my God. Dude, he does it wrong. He uploads like Twitter.
Oh, no,
he doesn't
that.
Do
it.
Yeah.
He uploads like someone like Dave would upload. That's what I would say. When we return, we're pocket watching. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.